Hi, this is Jim from Safety Words. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, on the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, February 13th. If you haven't gotten that Valentine's Day gift yet for your significant other, probably would be a good thing to do that right about now. Ay, ay, ay. A lot of things going on since we're there. We saw you last week on this great program here. And, we'll see what happens, how things go. We are going to touch the third rail of podcasts today. We're going to talk a little bit about religion. Oh no, not religion, not that. Because it's been in the realm of safety this week, the last week and a half, actually. As everyone here knows, I'm Lutheran, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. There are several different Lutheran denominations in the United States and throughout the world. In the United States, the ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, headed by Bishop Elizabeth Eaton. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which I'm a member of, is President Harris. Forget his first name. And then you also have the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Church. Well, I think they call it. But anyway, that's the third. And there are many, many others, differing in their things. And I was getting a lot of, I don't want to say calls, but a lot of feedback. They didn't call me. They text messaged me. And different conversations out there on what the hell is going on here. So basically, I'm reading out of Newsweek here. Future of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, is in jeopardy due to cost-cutting measures proposed by President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk. Employees have been locked out, and this report is from 2 days ago. Basically, it's a big thing because it's $40 billion annually for programs to combat HIV, malaria, tuberculosis, disaster relief, improve access to clean water, support economic development, and surviving nations. Now, that's the story here, all right? I'm going to give the story. Then I'm going to mosey on over to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And again, these are lcms.org. I thought I had it open here. And we have a letter from President Harris. I'm not going to read the entire letter here. It's very extensive here with this. Hold on 1 second here. Apparently there was a couple of letters here. He might have taken it down. Okay. Hopefully you took it down. Hold on. Hold on. LCMS.org USAID. So, yeah, here it is. With this. All right. And boom, boom, boom. All right. So, yeah, we got it. I moved it around a little bit off the website. But anyway, this is basically it. USAID. Now, Lutheran, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and several other organizations are out there. And I apologize for the pause there. A lot of these organizations out there deal with ministries in Africa, South America, some other war-torn areas. And a lot of their aid is mixed in, is a lot of their aid is from USAID. Catholic Charities is another one, but I'm not too familiar with their stance on this. And I know I'll get a lot of heat from, well, you're not Catholic, so you shouldn't be talking about Catholic things. I get it with that. So I'm going to, and the other thing is you want to talk about what you know. So a lot of the stuff is commingled here with is commingled right with the funding. So when a administration spokesperson had mentioned, well, the Lutheran Church is involved with some of this USAID money that's being cut. It no everything. Well, you're and I had one family member who was spoken to in a very aggressive way that, well, you're a Lutheran, blah, 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 and you're accepting all this stuff, and it's controversial, blah, blah, blah. You can read what all the controversies are. And then, on the other hand, you got people very upset on the other hand. So, I'm going to play you, Bishop, I'm going to play you Bishop Eaton's commentary, and this is being used as under fair use because it's you know, we're going to discuss this. This is actually a pretty important document here. If that's assuming I could get it, says it should work.
America seeks to be a witness to Christ by feeding people who are hungry, caring for those who are sick, and advocating for justice, peace, and the dignity of all people. This has been the calling of the church for over 2,000 years. Today, false accusations were made on X, formerly Twitter, regarding government funding to Lutheran organizations. The claims were those of money laundering and illegal payments. Yet these organizations have done the same work for 85 years in serving legally admitted refugees and immigrants. As church, we follow the Eighth Commandment of the Scriptures, which states, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." Despite misinformation and baseless doubt cast today on funding that supports Lutheran organizations across our country, the ELCA remains steadfast in our commitment and work with our many Lutheran partners and expressions of our church. The ELCA is also concerned for other faith-based communities and organizations who have similarly come under attack. We strongly urge political leaders at all levels of government to use their offices and platforms responsibly. They should consider the impact of misleading statements and conjecture without regard to the impact those statements have on the communities targeted by these messages. Our call to love our neighbors as ourselves remains steadfast. Seek the truth and share the good news of Jesus Christ as we continue to follow his teachings. Let me tell you a story. In the year 258, the Roman Empire, during one of its many persecutions of the church, ordered that the church turn over its treasure. The task fell to a young deacon named Lawrence, who was given 3 days to complete it. Immediately, Lawrence sold all the liquid assets and gave that to the sick and to the widows. He liquidated also all of the property and divided that up amongst the poor. On the third day,
He appeared before the emperor, who demanded to see the treasures of the church. Lawrence jested behind him, and there were standing those who were sick and hungry, the poor, the naked, the stranger in the land, the most vulnerable. And Lawrence said, "These are the treasures of the church." He was martyred for that. Be of good courage, church, and let us persevere.
Yeah, I apologize for the echo there. I really don't understand what that is. I haven't been able to work that out on either OBS system here on why it does that. I have no idea. That was Bishop Eaton's response to that, Bishop Elizabeth Eaton. Now we're going to go over to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and President Harris, and I'm going to read, he doesn't have an audio on this, so I am going to be reading it. And he mentions Ephesians 1, 15 through 23, and here it says, "As many of you are aware, General Mick Flynn, retired, publicly took to task Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service, LIRS, and several other Lutheran social ministry agencies for receiving large federal grants for work with immigrants." Those are just not in the letter, but there's they work with immigrants also here with that. That got the attention of Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. Doge. I was surprised. That got the attention of Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. I was surprised at the dollar amounts involved. The post on X accused LIRS, L-I-R-S, Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service, and other agencies of bearing the name Lutheran of money laundering. I'm writing to provide you with some facts about the complex and confusing situation. Then it goes on to say, and this pissed a lot of people off, I'm sorry. "The LCMS is a law-abiding and patriotic church body. We don't invite or support illegal immigration. We don't say much to or about the government. We don't have government contracts, not one. We leave issues of government to our 1.8 million members and 5,700 active pastors who act in the civil realm." And that means outside the church. "According to their Christian conscience as good citizens, we have spoken as a body on certain issues with that." And you can go and look it up for yourself here. "The government has no right to infringe upon religious freedom, including the free exercise of religion. Thoughts are tax-free," said Martin Luther. "All our people are trained from Sunday school to and catechism class and every Sunday sermon to be good citizens and advocate for just laws, punishment for evildoers, and mercy for those in need. Specific views on the details of how the government is involved in this are left to the individual as a citizen." So that, I mean, that is true. There is no, we do not do any politics in the church. Very, very rarely. I don't want to say never, but it's very rare. And with that, right? "The U.S. LCMS uses legal means to fight for First Amendment rights." That's, they do that when those rights are under attack. That is true. "We have suffered formal legal action much more as we have watched as the as DEI philosophy, formerly rejected by our church body along with white supremacy, has pervaded nearly every aspect of government activity, even as the U.S. government has versioned beyond all ethical and rational propriety. In effect, stealing the future from our children, we've been inundated with government attacks on those First Amendment rights. These subjects us to anxiety in the workplace, fear and lack of promotion in the military, and constant attacks at public schools and universities, familiarly following the Bible and sound reason on matters of sex. Our children are subjected to coercion at public schools. Millions of fellow Lutheran saints with and not capitalized, lowercase, around the globe are chagrined at U.S. embassies and programs preoccupied with other issues." I don't know, he lists them. "And there are many different customs as this program has been carried out globally." In other words, and this is true, other countries are pissed off because of some of our policies in this country. And going on here, and it gives the whole history of the ELC and LCMS used to work together, but however, they can't because there's a lot of disagreement, primarily on social issues and on government affairs, right? As LIRS is secularized and hired a non-Christian Hindu person to serve as president and CEO, the agency reorganized to become fully independent of its former partner church bodies. The diminished Lutheran ministry identity is reflected in its new name, Global Refuge. For the past 5 years, the LCMS has provided no funding to LIRS and has provided no official representation on the board. And basically, his whole thing is, we do not take money from the government in any form because we're trying to remain separate from the government. Now, what we call this in policy is the public choice theory. What's the public choice theory? Public choice theory is when the government gives you money, or anybody really, for that matter, gives you money, that's whose views it is going to, you're going to be required to have. You're going to be compelled to have. And this, unfortunately, is one of the central issues that nobody wants to talk about. We talked about this in a past episode where we went through the whole history of the public choice theory and explained what this was. You could Google it. I wouldn't trust AI on this one. And it's basically what the position of the church is. Now, I'm going into more my opinion on this stuff here. And one thing I would have, had he just left it at that, right, we would have just, it would have been a great letter, but he went into some politics with this letter saying this is not the official position of the LCMS. And you could go and read it. It's in the Lutheran Reporter. I'm sorry, the website is reporter.lcms.org/2025. And you could read that whole thing there and assign Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Now, I'm going to start out here with something I don't normally do here, but we're going to, again, we're touching that third rail here because we ain't afraid, because we're safety warriors here. We do deep dives. I'm going to read this Bible passage, and this is from the ESV, which is open source, non-copyrighted version of the Bible, which most people in my situation here use. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, as God said. Keep that in mind. Number one, 2 Corinthians verse 6. All right. Now, I want to share with you a story. It may lead into other stories, you know, because there are safety wars. I was a member of an organization, and we needed two cell phones. I was the head of the organization. Someone else was my partner in the organization. And I was going to pay for one cell phone. He was going to pay for the other, but we figured we put it on one account. And this way it's easier accounting-wise for that. Mistake. Don't do that. Don't ever do that. So what ended up happening was, first couple of months it went well. I paid a month. He paid a month, right? Or the organization did. But, you know, we each, you know, brought in money. And then after about 2 or 3 months, he decides, I'm not going to put any money towards this. And the way we had it worked out was he would call up and pay on his bank account on that. And then, right, again, another mistake. We're talking
20 years ago. So we're beyond any type of statute of limitations here. And what he ended up doing was, 2 or 3 months in, he stops paying the cell phone bill. And the first month, he's like, look, we were a little bit late this month on the receipts. Oh, just can you cover my part of this? Yeah, no problem. Then this goes into the second month. Then it goes into the third month. Then it comes in, well, look, I'm short on receipts this month because we have this, this doesn't come out, this doesn't work out, blah, blah, blah. Can you cover it? Oh, yeah, I'll cover it. He doesn't cover it. So now neither one of us has a phone. And this went on, and it got worse. So eventually, after a couple of months of this, I said, well, we're separating the account. You have yours. I have mine. And you don't pay your bill. You lose it. I'm not covering this bill here. Real simple. And he figured that he was going to, like a lot of partnerships, skate and not pay any bills then. Bigger, longer story than this. All right? So what's the story? We were in a joint partnership, and now I said, look, I'm not paying for this. Or if something happens, now we both don't have phones, sort of thing. So his phone had to always get paid because my phone gets paid. Get it? Okay, separate, right? That's story number one. Story number two is this. It's pretty much open knowledge out there that the CIA, their budget is not line by line. And we've been on continuing resolutions for a number of years here in this country where we have operated without a budget. They just do like a continuing resolution that is a stopgap here. So we don't, we don't have a budget. It's just a stopgap. It's sort of like, hey, Dad, I need 50 bucks. Oh, here's the 50 bucks. Hey, Dad, I need 100 bucks. Right? That sort of thing. Nothing ever really gets voted on. They come out with these omnibus spending bills and all this stuff to keep the government working and everything else. But the CIA never has had, and for good reason, because it's national security, and where the money goes, nobody knows. There's accusations right now that it went into USAID and through the grapevine, open secret, there's accusation. I don't know if they're true or not, that USAID is actually, some of these programs are those, in effect, street money. We'll be talking about the EPA in a little bit. But street money, where we have our actors inside a USAID, and they start giving money here, giving money there, and all these refugee programs that apparently the ELCA might be involved with. No, they're getting USAID and government money. All of it stops. And it's sort of like the same thing. Now they can't do their work. And there's legitimate work. People will starve to death here. People will not receive the medical aid that they need to do, that they need in some of these third world countries. But this is because the money is commingled and it comes from the government and there are always strings attached, public choice theory. That's my point of view, is that they probably should, right? It's a good thing, and it's very, right? One of the missions of the church is to help the sick and the poor and the dying and everything else. But the thing is, it's, again, getting involved with these unbelievers, with a government entity, you got to be really careful with. Now, will these programs go on yet? There's going to be private funding. Hopefully, some private individuals step up and start funding this stuff. Number three, well documented here, United Nations and a lot of the other international organizations have a financial interest in places like Africa because of the minerals. China is going over there and getting the mineral rights. The international banking system loans a lot of these countries money that they know they can't pay back, so then they're resources have to be sold off. And there's corruption, and everything else that goes in here. So I understand from the President Trump's point of view that we got to get a handle on this foreign aid because we don't know where a lot of it's going. But on the other hand, there's important work to be done. I hope, and it's my hope, that they actually get their stuff together here, and this is a separate type of thing. And what also happens when a church or private group gets that, I'm going to call it easy money from the government, what don't they do? They don't develop their own funding resources. Their business model is based on the government paying them. And right now, to the tune of $40 trillion in national debt, this might be a problem. Here's another thing. The national debt apparently has to be restructured in a couple of years here, or there's got to be something done here. And if we continue to accumulate debt, we're not going to get the interest rates. We're not going to get the advantages of having a low debt when we refinance some of this stuff. I'm not using, I don't understand that end of it. Haven't researched it. I'm not going to be one of these deep dive commentators with superficial knowledge. That's not me, but all of this goes in there. So what's my point? When you get involved and you're the church or any other organization and your business model is fickle, relies on a fickle situation, like funding from the government, a government program, or anything else, you got to be careful. Number two, if you're working for an organization, and I learned this in my first, one of my first employment experiences with a company I used to work for, they were reliant on like one client. And what do you think happened? They lost that client because they did some, there were some accusations and stuff, and they had another consultant working, and it was like a complete mess. When they lose that client, where are you going to go? We've all been in that situation, I think. You've been in this industry long enough. They're relying on one source of revenue, and then all of a sudden that revenue source dries up. Now what do you do, right? But now we're dealing with lives, tangibles here. So hopefully they get this straightened out soon. And the thing is, with all this stuff, I have to agree with Pastor Eaton, you got to be careful with what you say and don't knock people down like this. Don't be so quick to judge here. And I hope everybody who's involved in this can learn that lesson. And we're going to go to commercial break.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, we are facing the harsh reality here with this. So tomorrow, just to let you know, I'm going to be doing an all-day class, and it's going to be Marine Terminals Outreach Training, OSHA Outreach Training. Some of the folks out there already have called us up here from Europe, where they are doing a project in the United States, and they need outreach training right now. And apparently, we're doing it. So if you need outreach training, any of it, general industry, construction, maritime, and remember, maritime is shipyard, marine terminals and longshoring, or disaster response worker, we do it all here. And since October of last year, we were able to do it via an online platform, as long as it's a live person like me, you notify OSHA with that, whoever your training center is for that. With me, I got like three different ones here, but anyway. So, you know, come back here. And again, that's what's going on here. So let's try some of this.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Okay, I'm going to put in the warning again. Hold on.
Warning, the following broadcast contains adult language, adult content, frank safety discussions, and stories that might sound unbelievable. But believe me, every one of those stories is true. We didn't start the safety war, but we are going to fight to win it. For our families, for our communities, for our workplaces, and for our lives.
Okay, some EPA, a lot happened this week at EPA and the Department of Labor. So we're going to go right on over to the Department of Labor website here. And so here we are, a lot of stuff going on here with this. So, first thing, here, hold on. Okay, good. All right, I have to make sure this doesn't come up. This is from Safety and Health Magazine. Again, this is why we don't get all hyped up here with deep dives into things. So President Donald Trump has nominated former UPS and Amazon safety executive Dave Keeling to lead OSHA with this. Keeling was most recently director of global road transportation safety at Amazon, filling the role from July 2021 to May 2023. And the Kentucky native began working as at UPS in 1985, was vice president of global health and safety from March 2018 to July 2021. I wonder who the person was who suggested to the president that they get someone someone in charge of OSHA with actual experience in safety and health. I wonder who that was. Oh, I don't know. With that, you know, just for the record, I'm sure he got other people. He might have had nothing to do with it also, but I sent him a couple of letters on this, here to get somebody really who is a professional and not necessarily an attorney for this. Keeling's nomination is with the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which will likely appear before sometime soon. The nomination hearing hasn't been scheduled yet with this. So the previous candidate apparently dropped out. That was reported. And I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to President Trump for nominating me to the next OSHA administrator at the U.S. Department of Labor. As it has been an incredible honor. And if confirmed, I am excited about the opportunity to work with Secretary Lori Chavez de Raymer, and here it is. Deputy Terry Keith Sutherland is still there. So, with that, but this person's going to be the head of OSHA. If confirmed, Keeling would succeed Doug Parker, the former head of California Division of Occupational Safety and Health, who led the federal agency from October 2021 till January 20th. I'm going to say he did a pretty good job here. At least there were press releases there. It's a different philosophy if you're going to be a safety professional versus an attorney here. So here's my offensive story here. I might as well stop sharing here. With safety. And this was, I had some interaction with some people, this week here on how, on why do we do some of the things we do, the culture and everything. And they came down to paperwork. And you can say, well, Jim, you're going to talk about paperwork? Yeah, I'm going to talk about paperwork. Why does everything have to be, in writing? Especially with OSHA, with the checklists and everything else that goes in there, documentation. It's because in a court of law, normally, if it's not written down, it never happened. Not all the time, but that's basically it. Or dealing with regulatory agencies. Now, let's talk about paper and how this starts. So you're 2 or 3 years old and you start drawing and finger painting, and it's on paper. You go into kindergarten and you do something, and what do they give you? They give you a nice, and they still give stickers out, right? They give you a sticker or a gold star, or if your teacher is a communist, a red star. I'm only joking on that. But, you know, you get the idea. You go through first grade, second grade, and all through your education. And if you are good with paperwork, doing your homework, testing, everything else, that's how your success is gauged. And if you're not good with that, you guess what? You basically fall behind and you have a tough time. Then comes high school, and it only gets exacerbated more and more and more. Then what happens? You go into college and graduate school, maybe a PhD, maybe you take the professional track and get your doctorate in education or an attorney, juris doctor, right? That sort of thing. And it all comes down to paperwork. So when there is a problem out there, what's your first inclination? Paperwork. Is it any surprise? It's more and more paperwork. Or we got to get another plan. We have to do this. We have to do that. Where versus, if you're not that way, a lot of times, I mean, this is my own theory, the C student that was okay with paperwork, they'll come out with the idea, or maybe even be deeper in that, maybe you have people, the D and F students, that come up with an idea because they're all hands-on. But that's basically what it comes down to, why we were focused on paperwork. Now, fast forward this, what do we do with administrators of these agencies that are involved in paperwork, that are attorneys? It's a strong incentive, in my experience, for them to continue to concentrate on the paperwork, on planning, on this and that. When you need to go out there, if you're a safety professional, and go into the field and get out of the office, away from the paperwork, away from the virtual paperwork, see what's going on. Maybe you can come up with a decision like that. And no better example than the heat stress or the heat illness regulation that's on hold there. Probably be repealed with that. You know, read through it. Great document. I tell you, if you want to do a training class on heat illnesses and heat stress, go to the Federal Register, get the whole thing. It's great because they have the background material. You get one hell of an education there. But the fact of the matter is, out in the field, that's not how things work. I can't imagine. And the solutions, when they were promoting this rule, if you recall, we covered it on our program, every one of them was like people giving the employer, giving people shade. Simple solutions. Water, shade, Gatorade, things of that nature. And there's also, you know, we'll talk about the bill in Congress later on tomorrow on this, if God willing, if I can survive 7.5 hours of training online. And we'll go from there. So let's go back to our Department of Labor. And let's recall, here on Safety Wars, we're 3 or 4 days ahead of everybody with this. This is from today. Unemployment insurance weekly claims in the week ending February 8th. The advanced figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims is 213,000, a decrease of 7,000 from previous week's revised level. Previous week's level was revised up by 1,000 to 219,000 to 220,000. 4-week moving average was 216,000, right? A decrease from the previous week's revised average. So that's our graph and everything else. That's how it is with this. And that's the people collecting unemployment, not necessarily the worker participation rate. Dean Heil, I hope I'm pronouncing that, appointed as Assistant Secretary of Labor for Public Affairs. U.S. Department of Labor announced the appointment of Dean A. Heil as Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs. It's my great privilege to get to tell the story of the Department of Labor as we seek to advance the fortunes of job seekers, wage earners, and retirees everywhere. Heil served in the first Trump administration as Department's Director of the Office of Public Liaison. Prior to returning to the Department, he was President and founder of Heil Enterprises. He has extensive experience in government relations and as an attorney, working with a number of associations. Earlier in his career, he served as a senior advisor to the Idaho Attorney General and Governor. Troy Finnegan, appointed as Assistant Secretary of Labor for Administration and Management. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the appointment of Troy W. Finnegan as Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management. It is an honor to return to the department and continue serving an administration that believes in the limitless potential of American job creators and workers. Finnegan previously served as Executive Secretary to Secretary of Labor, where he managed department correspondence and high-level administrative processes. He also brings an extensive legal expertise to the department, formerly working as special counsel at Ackerman LLP and as general counsel of one of Florida's largest philanthropic organizations, Dr. Phillips Charities. So there we go with that. I guess they did not need congressional approval on that. Okay, we're going to go on over to the EPA. Administrator Zeldin announces that billions of dollars worth of gold bars, quote-unquote, have been located at outside financial institution. Calls for termination of Biden-Harris financial agent agreement and return of entire fund balance U.S. Treasury. U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced the agency has found billions of taxpayer dollars parked at a financial institution by the Biden-Harris administration. Administrator Zeldin is calling for termination of the financial agreement for the return of the entire fund balance to U.S. Treasury to ensure EPA oversight. Administrator Zeldin has also announced he will be referring this matter to the Office of Inspector General, and Congress and the agency will work with the Department of General, the Attorney General of the Department of Justice, right? Roughly $20 billion of your tax dollars are parked at an outside financial institution by the Biden EPA. This scheme was the first of its kind in EPA history, and it was purposefully designed to obligate all of the money in a rush job with reduced oversight, said Administrator Zeldin. One of my very top priorities at the EPA is to be an excellent steward of your hard-earned tax dollars. There will be zero tolerance of any waste and abuse, continued Administrator Zeldin. We review every penny that has gone out the door. The days of irresponsibility, shoveling boatloads of cash to far-left activist groups in the name of environmental justice and climate equity are over. 2 months ago, a video circulated on social media featuring a Biden EPA political appointee talking about tossing gold bars off the Titanic, intentionally rushing to get billions of tax dollars recklessly out of the agency before Inauguration Day. During Administrator Zeldin's confirmation hearing, he committed to ensuring that he would work hard to research and account for every dollar spent at EPA, not only during his tenure, but also from the last administration. Let's see if we could get this on here.
He committed to ensuring that he would work hard to research and account for every dollar spent at EPA, not only during his tenure, but also from the last administration. Let's see if we could get this on here.
Administrator Lee Zeldin. One of my very top priorities at EPA is to be an excellent steward of your hard-earned tax dollars. There will be off the Titanic, rushing to get billions of your tax dollars out the door before Inauguration Day. The gold bars were tax dollars, and tossing them off the Titanic meant the Biden administration knew they were wasting it. Following this revelation, during my meetings with members of Congress, I made a very important commitment to them and to the American people, which I reiterated at my confirmation hearing that if confirmed, I would immediately get a full accounting. Fortunately, my awesome team at EPA has found the gold bars. Shockingly, roughly $20 billion of your tax dollars were parked at an outside financial institution by the Biden EPA. This scheme was the first of its kind in EPA history, and it was purposefully designed to obligate all of the money in a rush job with reduced oversight. Even further, this pot of $20 billion was awarded to just 8 entities that were then responsible for doling out your money to NGOs and others at their discretion with far less transparency. Just under $7 billion was sent to one entity, called the Climate United Fund. I'm sure you and I now have some of the same questions. How do these organizations decide how to allocate funding? How much money have they given out so far and to whom? Are there any former Biden EPA staffers who are now working at these entities? Let me make one thing abundantly clear. At this point, there is zero reason to suspect any wrongdoing by the bank. Here's my position as EPA administrator. The financial agent agreement with the bank needs to be instantly terminated, and the bank must immediately return all of the gold bars that the Biden administration tossed off the Titanic. EPA needs to reassume responsibility for all of these funds. We will review every penny that has gone out the door. I will be referring this matter to the Inspector General's office, and will work with the Justice Department as well. The days of irresponsibly shoveling boatloads of cash to far-left activist groups in the name of environmental justice and climate equity are over. The American public deserves a more transparent and accountable government than what transpired these past 4 years. We take our obligations under the law as seriously as it gets. I've directed my team to find your gold bars, and they found them. Now we will get them back inside of control of government as we pursue next steps. As President Trump has vowed, we are going to usher in a new golden age of American success for the citizens of every race, religion, color, and creed.
All right, that's what we have here. I didn't realize it was that long. But that's it. I mean, you know. With that, almost hit the bad one here. All right. I mean, I don't know what to say here. With this, I mean, if this is true, again, I don't know. Then it's a major issue where, you know, can't account for any of this money. EPA orders most workers back within weeks, breaking union covenants. The Office of Personnel Management previously issued guidance purporting to grant agencies the authority to disregard telework provisions in union contracts based on a blanket assertion of management rights. The EPA, and this is from govexec.com, the EPA told employees Wednesday that the vast majority of them would be expected to return to traditional work sites over the next 3 months, with most expected in office 5 days a week before the end of February. In an email obtained by government executive, teleworking EPA employees who are represented by the National Treasury Employees Union and some other things, right, must return to full-time in-person work by February 24th. Teleworkers represented by the American Federation of Government Employees must return by March 24th. I tell you what, I don't know. This is what companies are doing. People are going back to work. I know some organizations, workplaces I'm at, they made a demand because people were doing things like that they shouldn't have. The productivity went down, or it could have been higher. So, out there, aides with tech mogul, and this is from E&E News by Politico, aides with tech moguls Elon Musk's Department of Government officially have been granted access to EPA's vast contracting system that details millions of dollars in agency spending. Members of the DOGE team working with the agency headquarters staff have been granted read-only access to the EPA acquisitions system. Now, what they are doing, or what's been reported, I should say, they are doing, the DOGE people, is they're using AI to ferret out where all of this stuff, right? With this, using AI, and as we know, AI could be good and it could be bad. The purge has begun. Environmental justice workers locked out of EPA Seattle office. This is from yesterday, opb.org. Nine Environmental Protection Agency employees in Seattle have been put on leave by the Trump administration because they work on environmental justice. Their jobs involving helping communities that breathe, eat, and drink more than their fair share of pollution. Communities near major pollution sources often have higher proportions of people of color, lower incomes, and shorter than average lifespans. The agency, Lee Zeldin, announced that the agency has from 160 employees who work on environmental justice and 11 work on DEI and accessibility on leave. The previous administration, and this is a quote, used DEI and environmental justice to advance ideological priorities, distributing billions of dollars to organizations in the name of climate equity. Zeldin said in a press release, "This ends now." Zeldin's statement said, "EPA will be good stewards of tax dollars and do everything in their power to deliver clean air, land, and water to every American, regardless of race, religion, background, or creed." That's what's going on. I'm not giving any opinion on it, just that there's going to be a lot of people that are out of work here with this. And here we'll share this one. Getting down to the end. It looks like I planned it out right here. So, news release, Bureau of Labor Statistics, real average hourly earnings for all employees were unchanged from December to January. Seasonally adjusted. Okay, so we're not going to have to recalculate our man years here, where basically it takes 15.7 years of wages, average wages, to generate $1 million. So when you see these millions and billions thrown around, realize that there are, that's 15.7 years of average revenue, that's how much productivity is taking out of our economy with that. A lot, it adds up. Imagine what that money else could go to with that. When we hear waste, fraud, and abuse. And there's controversy here with this. We'll see how this plays out. This is all a wait-and-see type of thing. But this is the report where I get it get that info from. And we're going to go on over to the weekly influenza surveillance. This is actually taken we've taken an interest at this one at one of the projects I'm on, because somebody has influenza B here. And as an influenza B, not too many people get that. And yeah, that's, well, let's do this. So this is the flu, right? So again, something like 30 to 60,000 people, you're usually at-risk people, are die of the flu here. And that's, you know, with that. All right, so summary, viruses in clinical lab, they're up by 31.6% positive for influenza this week. Influenza A, H1N1, PMD09, and HNA, H3N2 were the predominant viruses reported this week. As far as illnesses are concerned, 7.8% trend upward this week. And well, let's see if we get the map up in a minute here. All right. Key points. Seasonal influenza activity remains elevated and continues to increase across the country. During week five of the 4,377 viruses reported by public health laboratories, overwhelming majority were influenza A, and there were 113 influenza B. With that, outpatient respiratory illnesses is increasing and remains above baseline nationally for the 10th consecutive week, and all 10 HHS regions are above their region-specific baseline. How's Robert Kennedy going to manage this stuff? My question. One human infection of influenza A, H1N2 variant, and H1N2 variant virus was reported. The new influenza A, H5 cases reported to the CDC. No new influenza A, H5. That's what they're screaming about. The quote-unquote blue bird flu. And 10 pediatric deaths associated with seasonal influenza virus infection were reported last week, bringing the total to 57 pediatric deaths. And it goes on, 24 million illnesses, 310,000 hospitalizations, and 13,000 deaths from the flu so far this season. With that, so there was a map here. Hold on. Oh, there we go. There's the map. So let's, can we zoom in here on the map? How's that coming across? There you go. So with the map, we have New Jersey at the highest level here with that, along with 11 other states with that. And in the dark red, you have a number of states. The only states that are really minimal are Wyoming and Montana and Hawaii and Virgin Islands and Northern Mariana Islands, a.k.a. Siam, right, in that area. So that's what we got. That's with that. We're hoping to be on the air tomorrow and over the weekend. We got a lot of training. Then next week we'll be on a modified schedule. We may not be live, but we're going to be probably doing some updates via Rumble and YouTube and X out there. So for Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel, and I will see you the next time with some insightful things.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
And this is for Valentine's Day, in case you're not here, you're enjoying your loved one's company, your significant other's company.
Hard hat on my head, set the alarm. High voltage love in your arms. Steel toe boots, steal my heart. Now love's a machine, start to start. Spark of desire, emergency exits, this love's on fire. Hard hat and real, yeah, we comply. Our love's as strong as reinforced supply. Our love's like gears, it turns so true. Turbines of passion spinning with you. Mechanical love, it's built to last. Safety first, romance moving fast. Romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start. Dangerous signs, but we don't mind. We're safety certified. Hearts aligned. Locked out, tagged out, hearts entwined. You and me, we're one of a kind. Site romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start. Work site romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start.